Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to Awakenings Radio. That was a bit of Elements of Grace by Diana Garris, and she has been on the program as well. You may have caught her when she was on. A wonderful healer, artist, and musician working with different types of sound. I'm your host, and as I like to say, co-pilot, Michelle Mache. I want to welcome all that are joining us from the chat room, Sacred Space of Empowerment Room. Welcome all listening via Cosmic Dimensions, and welcome all of you that are listening via other podcast stations, as well as iTunes and the archives later on. You are with us here, not just in spirit, but you're here right with us. I think it's important to note that, because there really is no time, right? We're all converging. It might seem like different times, but our energy is always here co-creating the show. So I really appreciate seeing all of you here. Those of you that may have just surfed in, tuned in to Awakenings, maybe for the first time, let me tell you a little bit about the program. Our focus here is conscious living for conscious lives. Awakenings is the place for awakening conversations with artists, musicians, poets, mystics, authors, metaphysicians, visionaries, healers, teachers, authors, conscious beings of all walks of life that are focused on living consciously and are awake or awakening and taking this awakened state into their everyday living. Awakenings reflects the bridging point between science, art, and spirituality. And Awakenings Radio is a timely relaying of essential information, insights, inspiration, and tools for transformation and spiritual unfoldment. And we like to think of it as a virtual community. So we really do also welcome your feedback and your questions as well. If you are a guest in the chat, welcome to the program. And if you would like to interact in the chat room, if you have questions or feedback, all you need to do is register with Blog Talk Radio, and that's at the bottom of the chat page. You'll either see sign in or register. Those of you signing in, you know how to do that. You just your name and email. But if you are also liking to register, all it is your name and email, and that will allow you to interact. But it's fine to listen as a guest, but sometimes I've gotten emails saying, oh, I wanted to ask a question in the chat room, I wanted to respond, and I couldn't. And that just means that you do need to register, and that allows that interaction within the chat room. If you prefer listening by phone, the number is 347-539-5122. That's 347-539-5122. And all you need to do is press 1 on the keypad, and that lets me know that you do have a question or a comment, or you'd like to be heard. And we like hearing from you on the program. It's wonderful. Hello all in the chat. Got some wonderful people. Some of our regulars there. Renamed the chat room, the Sacred Space of Empowerment, which I believe it was renamed by Reiki, Drita, and Tammy way back when. So I love that. It is a sacred space of empowerment. You know, I always say this, but I get amazing emails of how people, where and how people are listening to Awakenings. And also, always, always, always people cite the chat room, always bring up that, oh, that's the best chat room I've ever been in, or there was such great energy in the chat room, or very often people will email me and say they were going through something, and you know, someone responded in the chat room or really helped them, you know, or gave them a reading in the chat room or suggested a great book or you know, or just were there, were helpful. So I love that because I really feel that it really helps to set the tone, the vibrational frequency, if you will, of Awakenings Radio, and really holding that space, you know, gives a wonderful foundation. So many of you know that we are doing, and I guess it's going to be till the beginning of May, and then I will end up giving everyone their wonderful little appreciation gift. But we are doing a little non-competitive contest, is what I'm calling it, focusing on how and where you listen to Awakenings. How do you listen to Awakenings? Where are you? What are you doing? Getting some wonderful feedback on this, and I want to read a couple of them today. But make note of this. The email address to send how and where you listen to Awakenings is awakenings@selfandlight.com. And you can also email at awakenings@selfandlight.com for any guest suggestions, guest feedback, topic, you know, suggestions for future segments, anything Awakenings that you'd like to share your thoughts about or your feedback. That email is awakenings@selfandlight.com, and it's also the place for you to email how and where you listen to Awakenings. Now, also on our Facebook page, Awakenings Radio, which is on Facebook, getting some wonderful interaction there and dialoguing of how and where you're listening to Awakenings, as well as some wonderful transformative stories of current situations being transformed or changed or transformation in people's lives by listening to the program and listening to the guests or buying their book or doing work. Got a wonderful email the other day of someone that did some work with one of the practitioners. I believe it was a Kimberly Rex doing some type of resonance work. And also, I think Carol Coolidge, another healer, somebody had done some work with them. So I love that feedback. I love to get that feedback. But did have somebody in emailing about how and where they listen to Awakenings, which was, I think I read it last week, but on the farm, making goat soap and doing farm chores. I love that. And so they'll listen on their iPod shuffle. Then we had one come in from Larry that is a truck driver in Florida. I get up very early in the morning, so I download your shows to listen throughout the day while I drive. I really enjoy your show. Thank you for what you do. And have a scent from the BlackBerry. Further technology. I love it. I love it. So this person is listening while driving the truck. I love it. Another one is we're having quite a few listening at work. I still, the farm chores, that's an interesting, Cindy had sent in listening while playing poker. I love that as well. Quite a few people listening at work. Obviously, some people listening treadmill, jogging, that kind of thing. Mowing the lawn, that was another little unusual one. On their boat. Laundry. We get a lot of housework ones. Ladies listening while doing the housework. I love it. Got one listening to the archives while I'm home playing computer Scrabble. I can drop the world, engage my left and right brain, multitask, if you will, and get some wonderful spiritual insight from you and your guests. Thank you for the wonderful program. I love that. So computer Scrabble while listening to Awakenings. And that's true, getting that left and right brain engaged there. Let's see, I want to read just a couple more because I enjoy these. I hope you guys are enjoying these. I really do. Let's see. Running. Okay, that's another one. Running up the canyon. Okay, in the hills. That's good. Okay, makes sense. Let's see, another one. Let's see, day-to-day work. Oh, I love this one. I'm really bored at work, and I love to listen to your show. Let's see, because I work in finance, and so listening to your show really lightens my day, and it helps me to like the work that I'm doing more. Your energies are very positive and uplifting. I love listening to your guests, and everything that you and the guests are saying are truly makes the time pass. See, that's great. I love it, listening to finance while they're doing their finance, while they're working on all that. Let's see, driving my children to school. That's another one. Okay, I love that one. Waiting for my children at school. Here's another one. So there's just some little themes here. Let's see. I listen every week. Your show comes on at 3 p.m. in Florida so that I download the archives later and listen while I'm relaxing outdoors in my patio. Okay, I love that. Let's see. I enjoy your show on iTunes archive when I paint or work on my art. I listen to your show while I'm relaxing in bed. I love to sleep in and listen to your show. I listen to it on the archives via iTunes. Great. So just, I want to give you some inspiration for all of you. I mean, it's just, one thing that tickles me is it just also shows the diversity that we all are. That we all are so similar, but we're all so individual. I love also hearing the different ways of multitasking, because you're doing that anyway. The bottom line is your subconscious mind is drawing in everything, and also consciously, you are drawing in all kinds of stimuli. So why not have more choice on the stimuli that you want to tune into? You know, and we have, you know, whether it's a radio program, a TV program, you know, all of this affects our mood, affects our attitude. It affects us on a tonal level, a vibrational level, if we go even deeper. So we do have this wonderful choice. You know, a lot of times for me, you know, I'm at home or I'm in my office or even in the studio. I think I might even do some right now. I love lighting incense. Again, that's another way to tap in. I love my Champa. I can move around and light it. You know, our environment. So connecting through our environment, I feel, is really, really important. It gives us this rich, wonderful, tonal experience of our existence. And so, you know, even clothing, the type of clothing that you're wearing, is it something soft? Is it fabrics that you like? Is it sustainable? Does it make you feel good? What colors are you wearing? Does that make you feel good? What colors are in your office or in your house or in your home? You know, there are a lot of studies actually done on this that people that work in those, you know, gosh darn cubicles, for lack of a better phrase, the people that do better or that are more productive or feel better while they're working are the ones that tend to decorate their cubicles, that make them more like home, that personalize them. And, you know, it's interesting, too, some of these emails that I've been getting on how and where you listen to Awakenings. One thing I'm really loving is I'm getting quite a few emails from people that are listening at work, and some people are even communicating to me that makes them feel better, uplifts them, makes the drudgery, you know, because not everyone, in a sense, is blessed to do work that brings in a paycheck that they love or brings some type of monetary exchange. So some people, you know, even consciously opt to just do a job that brings in a certain amount of money because that's what they need, and then they get their fulfillment elsewhere. So I've been getting, quite a few emails from people that say, you know, they have their, you know, they can't do incense, but, you know, they have pictures there or that remind them of their spiritual nature. One email I got, the woman had pictures of Yosemite and a certain screensaver that they use for meditation. And then they said they're also listening to the show. They're listening to the program and getting upliftment from the guests or whatever we're talking about, or they're learning something, they said, and it just really helps the day go by, but that they feel better. And so I kind of want to, you know, put this out there to everyone to create more sacred space in your life, and that means inserting yourself more in your life and more in your environment through things like perhaps incense or scents, or, you know, for some people it's scented candles, some people it's just open fresh air. Some people, maybe it's plants, more greenery, or flowers, fragrant flowers. Music. Music is huge. Music bypasses the left brain. It is a higher left brain or higher left quadrant, but it brings us into that state of unity brings us into a unified state. It's both left accessing the left and right brain, hemispheres of the brain, to bring more into that oneness. So, and what is that feeling of oneness? Is a feeling of aligned. It's being unified. So the more that we can do that, not just within our thoughts, not just within our interior world, but also within our outer world, the more that we can have environments that are more unifying. I mean, that's the word I really want to use, unifying, because there's so much happening, in a sense, out there that's very fragmenting. So the more that you can bring your inner consciousness to the outer, the better that you'll feel. Let's see, somebody's saying different kinds of self-sufficiency come in handy. Tammy is saying in the chat, I love to make altars, bring something in from the outside like a rock, shell, plant, flower, and create a sacred space for offerings, candles, incense. Absolutely, absolutely. But very good point there, Tammy. And an altar, a place that is sacred. You know, I work with a lot of people by phone. And one of the things that I really stress, I suggest at first, and then really I start stressing on it and saying, no, you really need to do this. Because I'm amazed how many people don't create sacred space in their home. And I think it's not only about creating it in your home, but even your office and in your car. Everywhere that you're going to be, you know, for a good chunk of time, a nice period of time, you need to have things around that remind you of the truth of who you are and that support the truth of who you are. You don't want to have to be in environments that are too sterile or overly mental. You know, you really want to have that balance that you're being nurtured emotionally, spiritually, physically, materially. The mind is being, whether it's being calmed or relaxed or unified, or whether the mind is being engaged or inspired. These are the ways that your spiritual nature reflects to you and speaks to you through you, in a sense. The more that you have a pulse on that, the more you're living more consciously, more awake, more aware. You're actually living more rounded, more whole in this way. So I really do stress to people, you need to have a sacred space in your house, apartment, whatever. You know, I've worked with people sometimes to say, oh, well, you know, there's not enough room. You know, we have kids, and the extra room now went to the baby. And I'm like, then you need a corner. You need to carve out a corner. And when you're in that corner, when you're in that space, that you also would, if you, those of you that have children and, you know, husbands, wives, girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever, siblings, you need to be able to sometimes say, when I'm here, when I'm over in this room or in this space, this is my time. This is, you know, I've worked with mothers in suggesting this to their children, because children really get this, especially at an early age, when you say, this is my time, my downtime, or my time to reflect, or this is my time out. And you allow them to have it too. You help them create their own sacred space. And so that the timeout isn't only because you did something wrong, but it's because you're choosing to take a timeout to reflect. I never forget, I worked with this couple, and actually more with the wife, but their little 4-year-old, just an amazing little being. And I was teaching the couple meditation, and then they brought their daughter into to work with me. And first they didn't think it could happen. I said, yeah, she can meditate. Kids are just may not meditate as long, you know, and in fact, in many ways, because they're in that play state, they're more in that meditative state. But so we taught her a meditation. We also taught her the meditation for conflict resolution, whether it's conflict within yourself, that you don't know what you want to do. And believe me, little kids have the same thing. You know, they don't know what they want to, you know, do I want to go outside? Do I want to go inside? Do I want to eat this? Do I want to play with this? Or I'm mad at that little friend of mine, or I'm mad at my brother, or I'm mad at my sister. You know, they have similar issues as us, maybe not that you know, in the adult world, it may not be seem to be the same magnitude. But to the child world, it is. Or maybe they have a conflict with the parent, one of the parents or both of the parents. And so we really went over this, and at one time, because I used to go to the home to work with them, She came in from preschool, and she was a little irritated. There was something going on, and then she was in the kitchen, and she just was in a little irritated mood getting her snack, and her mom was asking her if something's wrong, and she came in the living room, flipped her hair around, her long hair, and she said, "I need to go meditate. I need to clear my mind." This is a four-year-old, you know, flounced her hair, turned around, and went into her room, shut the door, and she went, you know, into her little meditation space. We actually kind of peeked, and she just sat there. And it must have been only for a minute or something. I mean, it was very short. And then she came back out and said, "Oh, I feel so much better." I will never, never forget that. It just, and the look on her face, it must, if she sat there a minute, you know, maybe 2 minutes, no more than that. I mean, I don't even know what she did then, but just the fact of having that meditation procedure, in a sense, she just went in there. She knew, I need a time out, you know, I need to take time for myself, and came back out with this small, oh, I feel so much better than I did before, and then went about her business, you know. So, you know, long story to kind of emphasize that there's no excuse. You can teach children, even teenagers, you can teach them that this is part of how we do life, and it gives them permission to take a time out too, to not always have to rush to decide something or to argue if they're not sure, you know, especially for teenagers, because, you know, they're emancipating themselves to a degree. They're individuating more. They're actualizing more. But sometimes, you know, things are a little confusing. Do I want to push for, you know, on this issue or issue A or issue B, or should I just let that go because there's something else I really want to do? Instead of, you know, gives them time to reflect and say, well, what's really important to me, you know, or how do I want to respond to this? And I feel that, you know, as we are evolving more and more as a species and as a collective, many of us are there already, but as this information and this way of being is getting more into the collective, more into the mainstream, you will see more places for sacredness. You know, more park benches, more patios, more ways to and places to eat outdoors, more places to pull off the side of the road, lookout places. You'll just naturally start seeing an outpicturing of the collective interstate that says, this reflection is important too. This being able to have this type of music, or this type of sound, or this type of imagery is important too. And you'll begin to see more and more of that, and see that it is more and more important to everyone. You'll see it more celebrated. And oh, Tammy's saying, I used to tell my boys when they were little, breathe and find your center. It stopped them in their tracks. Brilliant. See, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. That's great. Breathe and find your center. And see, you know, if two things. If you either started early enough with your children, they take on to it. If you're doing it later, but you make it a flexible rule, if the children see you doing it, they will also start doing it. Even if they're like, oh, this is what my mom makes me do or my dad makes me do, I can't believe it. They'll start using it. In fact, I've worked with a couple of people that's occurred with their teenage children, and then they later find out that they were requiring that of their friends. Especially one situation I know where the friends had a band, you know, garage band, and the son started using kind of that centering or let's tune in or let's meditate or, you know, with the band or the band members, you know. So the possibilities are endless. We have infinite possibilities for celebrating us as sacred beings and connecting into this sacred space that we are. And like I said a minute ago, one of the ways definitely to do that is through music and through sound. Today we have with us Hans, who is the human behind 33 Bowls. Amazing sounds come from these Tibetan singing bowls, or as I also like to call them, healing bowls. Singing bowl recordings for relaxation, meditation, yoga, massage, holotropic states create natural endorphins within the body. And so Hans works with these singing bowls. He also has a wonderful site, 33bowls.com, that you can also have these wonderful sounds for yourself, these wonderful healing sounds. I want to welcome to the program Hans.
Hello.
Hello, Hans.
Hi there. Hello, Michelle.
Hi. How
thank
are you?
All right. I'm going to say thanks for following a hunch and having me, of all people, on to talk about the 33 Bowls Project.
I connected or flowed through Twitter, was in the stream,
yes.
And I happened to check out your site. I'm not sure which one it was, but you had just all these wonderful different compilations of the Tibetan singing bowls, and they just were amazing, wonderful. So I've always been intrigued by them. I have a few myself, but I've always been intrigued with the different, because they're different notes, aren't they?
Well,
some of them are.
Yes.
Are they?
There's quite a lot to tell about them.
Good. I want to know. We all want to know.
There's three characters here that are probably not important. That's me, myself, and I. I have people see the collection of bowls at times, obviously, around them. They go, wow, are those your bowls? And my response is usually, no, I'm their human. just in quote marks, just the facilitator. I feel like I'm standing on the shoulders of the proverbial giants. There are artisans from hundreds and possibly thousands of years ago who ended up creating these bowls, figured something out in terms of whatever we called it back then, brain-mind entrainment, here's this incredible art. One distinction with the bowls, these metallic bowls, it is actually the imperfections that make such incredibly beautiful sounds. When you're listening to the crystal bowls, they're close to being, depending on who you talk to, they're either an amorphous or truly a crystalline structure. But they have they primarily have simpler nodes or modes of resonance. And the art of making the metal bowls, which is almost lost. I mean, there are a number of contemporary bowls out now, but it's the older ones, the ones from hundreds of years ago, that have these incredibly wonderful sounds to them, very deep, sonorous, harmonic, harmonious. Pick a word.
Mm-hmm.
And there are slight radial asymmetries in the bowls, which I believe were intentionally done. I can't prove that, but I believe it. Because what happens is it sets up very complex nodes and different resonance frequencies in the bowls. And a well-made one will give you all of these subtle combinations. The analogy is a well-tuned piano. If you hear a piano sound and it's tuned to a good stretch tuning, as it's called, there's a very sort of involving kind of effect of the sound that you don't get in, say, single string instruments like a harpsichord. And what that is there are multiple strings that are slightly offset from each other, and intentionally or serendipitously done, they create these sub-harmonic rhythms that are close to the deeper meditative states. It turns out, we can sort of go to bigger picture here about rhythms. Everything has some kind of a rhythm, whether we're talking about planetary timescales of Pluto with a 250-year cycle, or down to the quantum scale of the Planck constant, where things are happening in femtoseconds. There is still a rhythm to it as to how we experience it.
Right.
We're used to events in times and spaces that we're sort of comfortable with, something in about the 1 foot to 1 meter range, that we can handle that. And so these rhythms are similar to rhythms that our physical ancestors grew up with. There is a very slow rhythm that, if you're familiar with healing, is known as the cranial sacral rhythm, which is very similar to our breathing rhythm, which also is very similar to the heart rate variation, the HR variation, HRV it's called. When a human is in a coherent state, their heart is not actually beating at a steady rate. It's moving up and down very smoothly with the breath, with the cranial sacral rhythm. And this, coincidentally or not, is the same rhythm as the ocean waves.
The cranial sacral rhythm.
Yes,
the ocean,
it is. And in a well-tuned piano, and when we do things just right with the Tibetan or Himalayan or Nepalese singing bowls, we end up setting off some of those same kinds of ebbs and flows. To our perception, it's not so much a rhythm, but kind of an ebb and flow. But it feels good, basically. It's the bottom line, because I think something in us innately recognizes that.
Mm.
And it's funny, in seismology, they used to throw out the really low-frequency information when they're monitoring for earthquakes. They're looking for the kaboom events, basically. And
right,
it turns
right.
out that the data is there in the seismic data of those ocean waves moving the continents ever so slightly. It's only a fraction of a micron in amplitude, but they are indeed moving just slightly to that. And a skilled craniosacral practitioner can palpate that same rhythm inside us and, you know, draw your own conclusions. It's possible that as our physical ancestors crawled out of the ocean, they brought along this sac of fluid that innately wants to resonate in that same way. So that was a long explanation of why we think it feels good.
But so what I'm hearing you say, in a sense, there's something innate to us that when we're hearing and feeling perhaps the vibration of the bowl.
Sure. Well, we in the Western world are several generations into artificial sounds that we may or may not have innately recognized as natural, quote-unquote, sounds. There's a lot of synthesis of a lot of electronics, and we can do incredibly wonderful things with technology. Don't get me wrong. I'm one of those that bridges the art and the technology, I guess. But the innate recognition that we have of certain sounds is not an intellectual process. And it is a whole-brained or a gestalt or a gut level or a feeling. And we don't always have words to describe that other than it feels good or like it or don't like it. And that's often the level of articulation that it's really all that's needed in terms of if you enjoy something or not, do you like it or not?
Right.
From my end of producing something that, shall we say, strikes a chord or hits that note in as many people as possible, I've, of course, gone to, what do you say, great measures to ensure that resonance or that, there are other words for it, ongaku is a Japanese word for the essence or the soul of music and sound, that is in the recording so that as many people as possible universally resonate with it, and it makes them again feel good or coherent or aligned. Or
and what is that called? The Japanese word?
Oh, ongaku. Ongaku. O-N-G-A-K-U. It's a phrase meaning
ongaku.
Soul or essence of music, essentially. And
soul or essence of music.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it turns out that it's a lot of the subtler stuff in the recorded sounds that do make the difference. We again. Sounds like I'm saying not so many nice things about the Western mode, but there's an old joke about there's 2.7 kinds of people, those that are linear and those that are nonlinear or fractal. The linear mode of thinking has been very useful for sort of gross effects, building roads, bridges, boats that don't sink, and so forth. But the nonlinear complexity theory, chaos theory, and so forth, appears to be a closer model of the universe in which we exist. So there's a lot more going on. And when we move from the linear to the complexity model, the old notions of a chain only being as strong or as its weakest link don't make sense anymore. But what does make sense is a chain is only articulate as its most resolved or nuanced link. So when one does recordings, the trick is to catch as much of that nuance, that subtlety, early on in the recording chain. And this is part of the art that I have managed to do with the 33 bowls recordings, is that there is a lot of nuance there. So even when it goes through a lossy compression process like the MP3s for distribution, it still has a really good feel to it because that initial vibration, so to speak, is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd probably bore most of the people listening if I went into all the technical details, but there's a lot more to it than just throwing up a pair of off-the-shelf microphones and hitting record, much like, I guess, if a photographer doesn't just sit down and take a picture. There's a whole lot to the how you frame the event acoustically with analogies to how one would do a visual event. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is it? You're saying you're miking it differently then?
From what I can see, I don't believe anybody else has done it quite this way.
Okay.
There is very little of anything off the shelf in the recording chain I've done with the 33 Bowls project. I've got a rather technical and artistic background, so I do speak technicalese quite well, it seems. What really it boils down to in terms of technological stuff, in both recording and reproducing, whether you're talking about the recorders or you're talking about the monitoring systems, stereo systems, iPods people listen to, is that there are overlooked parameters because it's convenient to overlook them. The vast majority of recording equipment and playback equipment is built to a linear model rather than to the chaos or the complexity model. And they do linear models, presuming that everything is steady state, ignoring the time domain. And when one pays attention to this, there are very few equipment manufacturers who do pay attention to this, but when you do pay attention to what's known as a memory effect or a stored energy effect, it's kind of analogous to being present right in the moment instead of being stuck on the past, only we're talking in time frames of milliseconds and microseconds as opposed to, say, weeks, months, years that people have memories. And it turns out that recording equipment is not just sensitive to electrical signals, it's also sensitive to acoustic, to optical, to thermal signals. And most equipment out there has a really bad case of again, it's called a memory effect, where the events aren't clean. And as I mentioned before, we're into several generations of people of having evolved and kind of adapted to what recording equipment does. But there have been a number of studies done to show that when you record very, very cleanly, taking into account all of these effects, people's brains are actually in an easier state, that our brains in these few generations into recorded artifacts still haven't quite worked out how to listen to it, how to filter it. So there's actually more
stressful
brain
activity.
So you're
saying our brains aren't necessarily wired yet to listen to this?
Well, let's see. I suspect that our brains haven't evolved or adapted within these few generations to the new way of having this layer of schmutz or fuzz with all of the sounds we hear. We subconsciously tune it out, but it does use up processing power, so to speak, brain horsepower.
Exactly. It
and
does. Well, that's what I was saying at the top of the program. People are
right.
still being affected by it.
Right. And
right?
The difference is, say, between lying out on the beach and feeling the sand on your feet and lying in a tanning bed. They'll both get you suntanned, but one of them is a very much more relaxing, natural experience. And likewise, when you hear live acoustic music, there's a certain ease, liquidity, fluidity to it that you don't quite get in most reproduced music. And what I've done with these recordings is I've gotten closer to that ideal of something that really emulates the real acoustic space, the timing, the subtleties. It's amazing how sensitive our ears are. When we're listening to sounds, not only is our brain processing away and trying to make sense, and the filters are adapting away as we speak now, but the ears are physically responding to the envelope of the sound, so that the muscles around your eardrum are actually expanding and contracting in response to every sound you hear. So traffic rumble, for instance, your brain is processing that and quote-unquote controlling your eardrums to contract, expand, contract, expand. And for better or worse, we really are part of the environment that we hear. This is why I would claim that listening to good Tibetan bowl or singing bowl recordings gives us that sense of ease, because there's something more natural that our ears and our brains start to entrain with.
Right. Now let me ask you something, Hans.
Sure.
Because we do, and it ties into Sound Alchemy from Twitter is listening, said hi to you. in the chat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. So if we are being, in a sense, to some degree, bombarded with certain sounds, and what I'm hearing you saying, that the ear kind of adjusts so we don't perhaps not, you know, it tempers that to a degree. Listening to certain types of music, and obviously the Tibetan singing bowls would be one form or sounds, could that counterbalance what we're being bombarded, or off-stave the non-healthy or non-life-enhancing effects of, let's say, traffic, city noise, beeping, yelling, you know, all that kind of perhaps sharper, harsher stimuli that we're getting. Mm-hmm. When we listen, take the time to listen, whether it's going to the ocean, like you said earlier, laying on the beach, listening to the waves, or listening to the Tibetan singing bowls, or other forms that are more in alignment with our true nature, does that counterbalance at all any of the effects of the other stimuli?
Yes, the short answer is yes. What that's doing is providing a coherent, again, you could say stimulus over the mm-hmm. chaotic or entropic stimulus that we are constantly bombarded with. The funny thing is that this mechanism by which our ears actually contract and expand is believed to be an evolutionary link, a survival link of being able to hear a wide dynamic range of sounds. Mm-hmm. When the little creature could hear the snap of a twig when a predator is walking up on them, if they could hear that slightly better over the other background noise, they had a short amount of just a little more time to react and get out of the way and pass on their genes to the next generation. So this contracting, expanding is actually an incredible way to have a very wide dynamic range to our ears. We can hear a wider range than we can physically see, although we tend to think of ourselves as a very visual species. Certainly our culture is very, hung up on visual stimuli. We can hear a range of 1,000,000 to 1. In other words, when you're hearing an event like the thwack of a kettle drum or, of course, sound of a Tibetan singing bowl, for an example, or a jazz quartet, or a punk rock band just blasting away, whatever it might be you're hearing, your ears are actually tracking 1 part per million down in there. Those little tiny squiggles down there do make a difference in how the sound is perceived. And again, this appears to actually be an evolutionary characteristic, that we could localize very subtle sounds and hear, like I say, predators walking around in the jungle behind us. Or if we were the predator, we could hear the food walking around. Either way, right? And this side effect of this is that we as humans, when we hear sounds that are a lower frequency, our eardrums are wiggling to them, so to speak, as are our brains controlling our eardrums to do that, and we have this phenomenon known as brainwave entrainment. This is, dare I say, exploited in the practice of binaural sounds, where there's a specifically wearing headphones with a slightly different tone in each ear that fools the brain into producing the difference frequency between those two. And my humble opinion is that if you're going to play around with binaural beats, whatever they might be, hemisync or whomever, be really careful with how and whom you're doing it with. It's not the kind of thing that you just want to plop on the headphones and play with, or worse, pay a lot of money to some huckster who's going to sell you some special something that will basically scramble your brain a little bit and will definitely give you altered states, but it may not be for the better. But hearing natural sounds is a very healthy way to do that. That's my feeling.
Well, I'm more for that. I mean, there are ways, even pace or pitch of voice will do that. There are ways to create that unification rather than, and I find too, the interesting thing with like the binaural beats, and I know a lot of people are into, one issue I do have with it though is because there is an individual aspect to our brainwave function.
Oh, sure, certainly. You can't have a one-size-fits-all where you've got a 10.5 hertz wave and that's not going to match everybody, but it's going to force them into it. Yes.
Exactly. So
right.
Exactly. That's where I was going. Exactly. So, you may be in balance to, a computerized balance or what someone thinks you should be balanced to, but it may not be your balance, and then you're actually off, which means you just have to just go back to good old-fashioned, kind of one-on-one something,
Yeah, now in defense of neurofeedback and biofeedback and techniques like that, one of the things that I did do with these is monitor the heart rate variability. There's an outfit called HeartMath who market a very neat little doohickey. You can either get a software version or a little hardware standalone box that will tell you when your breathing and heart rate and all your rhythms are coherent with each other.
Yeah.
And what I have found is that putting on the bowls puts one into 100% coherence. You don't even have to do anything. You just relax into it, and off it goes. So that's a form of feedback that, at least for the brains and minds that I've tried it on, it does induce that coherent state.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's another reason why in this initial recording, of which there are many more in the hopper, so to speak, many more projects on the way, but the length of the pieces at 45 minutes and around 27 minutes are equivalent to one REM cycle and about a little more than half of an REM cycle. And that's on purpose to allow someone to go fully through that REM equivalent REM cycle, or if they're asleep, REM cycle. And the
that's 45 minutes, right?
Yeah, and the half-length one is good enough to get somebody totally deep down into the deep state and then just leave it as is. It's funny that in terms of categorizing music, I've heard of course the 33 bowls characterized as, oh, that's really good for relaxing. That's partly true in that I get lots of feedback about what people do with it. One is for falling asleep, but it's not that it necessarily puts you to sleep per se, but it holds that space so that your brain, mind, body, psyche can naturally relax into a more less tense or more natural state, and then allow what needs to happen to happen.
So you're saying that the Tibetan singing bowl, it's not that it's doing it to you, but
yeah,
it's aligning you to that state,
right,
that your body, your natural body process can take over.
Right. Without trying to sound like this is the universal elixir for all that ails you, I have found that it gets categorized as New Age music because that's probably the most obvious category to look for it in, but I would think it should really be called chameleon music. There are very few pieces, some ambient pieces, some of the works by an artist known as Yatri, Y-A-A-T-R-I, who does a piece called Star, which is sort of on the opposite end. It's all synthesized, but it does that same trick of holding the space without intruding on it.
And that's Y-A-T-R-I, we're getting that?
Y-A-A-T-R-I.
Okay. And also, what's the best, you have two websites, I'm getting a question about that. So,
33bowls.com will be the central to everything. I've got a link to the Posterius blog from 33bowls.com, which is sort of an ongoing story as the project evolves, but I think everything will be at some point linked to 33bowls.com, to keep it simple.
Okay, so the singing. Now,
here's
how?
Here's a plug for. Here's a plug for Posterius. It's a wonderful way
go.
To blog.
Exactly.
It is.
tell me a little bit of your thoughts on sound, using sound and tone for healing, because I feel that we're really more going in that direction because so much has been about body mind, which I love. It's great. Mm-hmm. I've got a background in that, but at some point, it seems that we're being, technologically and sociologically, psychologically nudged to go beyond the reference of the mind or analytical or linear thinking.
Yeah. This thing we call
and sound
mind.
Definitely does that.
Yeah, this thing we call mind, we're still not quite sure what it is because we think we have a network called the brain figured out, but who makes the phone calls, so to speak?
Right, exactly.
There, yeah.
Well, consciousness, I think that's the whole focus of aware, moving into the space of consciousness or awareness, or what we may say the higher mind or non-local mind. Mm-hmm. But then we have, of course, that component of that's more left brain predominant, of the analyzing mind,
sure,
or the cognitive.
Yeah, it's funny. So I took one of those left brain, right brain tests, and as they say, I totally failed it. I was pegged on the right brain side. Surprised.
Were you?
Yeah,
wow.
Because
Phil,
I can do plenty of technical stuff. I can talk you under the table about nanoseconds and picowatts and microfarads and all that stuff, and do truly grok mm-hmm. all that stuff. But it's funny that it must be the dominant node is just the gestalt as opposed to the excruciatingly boring details.
Well, there is something also, Hans, that because I do a bit of that, being trained in various mm-hmm. forms of hypnotherapy, we work with testing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, even somebody that is extremely high, they call it extreme high left brain, mm-hmm. will actually read right brain.
Oh,
so
really?
your high level abstract mathematicians, musicians,
sure.
it's such a high expanded or extended portion of the left brain that it actually, you know, bridges over, leaks over, or is bumped over to the right brain. And of course that's where you get that whole idea of right, you know, where does
yeah.
science and art meet, or, you know, music, is it
yeah.
Even though it's very mathematical, but it reads very abstract and very emotional, right?
Sure.
You don't get more
sounds,
emotional than music.
That sounds like full circle there, where all paths do lead to Rome.
Exactly.
Right. You can get there through
yeah.
math, or you can get there through mysticism, but it's going
yeah,
to be
well,
a very similar destination, yes.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, someone like an Einstein, who's, you know, obviously extremely left brain, but would read very right brain,
mm-hmm.
because at the point of that, you know, well, you look at it with the Pythagoras rule, sacred geometry. I mean, you look at all that, it's, yeah, I mean, to say it's math, but at some point it arcs and gets over into that woo-woo world.
Yeah, you know, this might be a limitation of the tests, too, in terms of what they're really trying to measure is the level of expansion of consciousness versus is it specifically left-brained or right-brained as to how it gets there. You know, one point about music in that most music is trying to convey some kind of message. There's a phenomena known in the business as the Caruso effect, which means that whatever popular song best communicates the raw emotional feeling, communication, is probably what's going to be the most popular in a particular generation with a particular level of technology used in the distribution. So it's called that because back in the days of 78 Shellac Records and Cactus Needles and Horns, Caruso projected really well through that medium. And the point is that music is always trying to tell you something, whether it's left brain or right brain. There's sort of, what is it, about the dozen different messages that most pop songs have. Boy meets girl, girl meets boy, boy breaks girl's
yeah.
heart, all that kind of, all those stories, you know, the human drama. But what I am claiming happens with at least these bowl recordings is that it is holding the space as opposed to specifically trying to tell you something.
Right.
And that's a difference. It isn't, that's the same thing that my buddy Yatri does again with synthesizers, where you will find yourself feeling emotions that are not at all related to the music, but they're there. And it's been holding the space to allow those to happen. And that's probably one of many paths to get to a more expanded form of consciousness, what's known as coherence or alignment. And
now, what's interesting that you bring this up, and I didn't know that it Caruso effect.
Oh yeah, isn't that a
now,
fun phrase for concept?
Yeah, I love it. Well, what it to me though, that's an interesting highlighting and also confirmation, because very often what begins to happen when people get to a certain awareness or state of awareness, whether you want to say level of consciousness or state of awareness, where there is less to no drama in their life, they're not playing out those scenarios. They're not
oh,
playing
we're
out those.
On that, aren't we?
Well, yeah. What happens is they can no longer listen certain music. First of all, first there's some emotional charge on it where they're just, they're not into it. And then the next level is kind of this neutral board, no resonance, nothing in common. I can't listen to that. And they find themselves listening to, usually what's interesting, it's music usually that doesn't have words.
That's funny. You're pretty well describing my musical tastes. What was it? Stanislav Grof did a listing of music that he recommended for holotropic breathing, for that form of getting to altered states. And I broke out laughing because it's most of the music I have already on my shelf.
Yeah.
It's that kind of something that's less verbal, more holistic, less of the story, the drama, the so forth, and not knocking that at all. It's lots of fun.
If you think about it, at some point there is a certain shift,
mm-hmm.
and not to say that you never listen to, but let's talk about more predominant, or your chronic pattern.
What appeals to you at the time? What you've evolved to?
Yes,
where your tastes go.
Right, but if you look at it too, when there is a certain shift that these stories are no longer relevant to you. You're no longer mm-hmm. playing that out. So you don't have that coherence or resonance to that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not singing that in your life in a sense. So it's no longer relatable.
Uh-huh.
A
debate as to whether we are reinforcing the patterns by constantly playing and bombarding ourselves with, of course, not just music, but with television dramas, or if we're giving it a healthy place to be expressed. And I lean towards the school of thought that says we're really actually sort of re-traumatizing ourselves with it rather than resolving it. By constantly bombarding ourselves with
I kind of think a little of both. I think some of it is good, but I think mm-hmm. it's like sometimes people stay too long at the party. They keep listening to it over and over, and then they're wallowing in it, and then attracting more and more.
At least till the potato chips and the beverages run out, right?
So there seems to be more of an emergence of these sounds, these tones, nature sounds, or even, like you're talking about your buddy Yatri, even mm-hmm. synthesized music that you're creating your own, music scape to it, your own inner, traveling your own inner landscape. So along those lines, what do you feel, whether it's you're working with the modality of the singing bowls, where do you feel we're going with things like sound healing or toning or using the singing bowls for healing or alignment?
Well, I think or feel that probably like many practices, there's going to be a lot of stuff that is kind of me too's, kind of wannabes, kind of along for the ride. And then there's going to be a few good innovators who are really getting it and, in effect, resonating in it, doing it themselves. So there will probably be a lot of hucksters claiming to do sound healing or to see chakras or so forth and so forth. But I guess the proverbial bottom line is, how does it feel to you as the individual when something's done? Is somebody telling you a story and taking your money, or is there something that really just clicks, resonates, and feels right? Certainly, we do need to have more and more, coherent stimulation, because we've got this cacophony of culture all around us from car noises and so forth. I mean, there's that difference when you hike up in the hills and you get away from the traffic rumble is when you most notice, oh, it's not there, but it's kind of there all the time. The same thing, same phenomena happens on a scale when you're trying to make clean audio reproduction equipment. There is something known as phase noise in the clocks that run the digital analog converters. When there's low-frequency phase noise, it doesn't sound as good. It's that same sort of chaotic, entropic something that just intrudes. So I don't have a good set of crystal or a particularly good crystal ball. I do know that we just kind of show up and we kind of make the future happen as we go. And my whatever little part it might be is hoping that there's more and more happy, coherent, aligned people around, then I have a better time hanging around with them. So if the bowls can facilitate that, great. That's kind of been the business model where I've been doing it as an open model. I have the entire recordings available free as streaming players on the website and encourage people to spread the widgets around, pricing the downloads, the MP3 downloads at rock bottom price, so nobody's going to go broke at $1.78 for the album. And the CD, which is due out in only a couple of weeks here, we're wrapping up the
final
through Mercury Retrograde here. I ended up remastering them in what's known as a high-definition compatible digital format, HDCD, so they sound really, really good. This is back to that bit about the nuance and the resolution that's in the recording.
Now, when does the CD come out, and what is the name of it?
If I had to pick a date, I'd say, why don't we say May
12th?
Around
okay.
there.
Okay.
It's
okay.
going to be exact. It'll be the exact same two tracks, only in a higher resolution format than one can get on a download. It'll look pretty close to the same wonderful artwork on the front and back, the same dedication and gratitude to the artisans who made the bowls, and it'll initially be available through CD Baby. Then through local retailers, if anybody there listening has...
Probably Amazon, if on CD Baby, yeah.
You know, Amazon
Not sure.
is an interesting beastie with their CD distribution. They have two formats. They have one that's known as On Demand, and I am specifically not going to do Amazon On Demand for the CD because it is basically a cheesy, duplicated disc that doesn't sound good. The CDs are being produced at a plant that does every known trick known to humankind to make them sound really, really, really good. And this is, you know, back to more technical details here. A duplicated CD versus a well-manufactured CD will have the same bits, the same ones and zeros, but the track pattern will be much dirtier, and you will end up with one that just doesn't sound as good. It was not good when I did a test run on a duplicated one, and so I went to further expense and time to get very well-done manufactured ones. The idea is to provide as good of a value to somebody. If somebody's going to pay five times as much money for a CD versus the download, it better really be good. So we'll let the listener's ears be the judge, but I think it is. I am also eliminating the middleman, or middle person, whenever possible, so the CDs are going to be priced at $10 a pop rather than the usual $15 to $18. And if there's anybody who has their favorite bookstore, record store, or New Age bookstore, whoever, who would like to carry it, have them get in touch with me through the 33 Bowls website. I'll be glad to distribute them that way. But I'll actually be doing the distribution directly to not line the pockets of the middleman, but get more copies out to more people. If you're familiar with reading this curve, this is knee on the curve where if you charge less, you sell more of them because people don't wince at the thought of buying them. That's where I'm attempting to be, down at the comfort zone there.
And let me ask you, why 33 bowls?
Oh, well, there were 33 bowls. obvious kinds of ones.
I thought so.
I was doing a concert at a yoga studio. It was fun. It was a Thanksgiving concert, actually. I played bowls live for a yoga class, and everybody had a really good time. And the yogi himself countered. I said, Hans, you know you have 33 bowls? And I went, oh, that's it. It was one of those eureka moments. Plus, it's easy to memorize, and the domain was available, so off we go.
Perfect. 33, you know, what I thought about. Well, you know, what's interesting, the 33 breaks down to the 6, which is...
Well, it's also a master number, and it's the responsibility, which is the 6 number. Yeah. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's different of the tree of life.
Yeah.
Beauty and alignment. And Now, where did you find the bowls at?
Boy, that's one of those funny stories that does not make sense from a linear perspective. It just absolutely won't it is truly a serendipitous or synchronistic kind of story. I don't know about everyone else, but for me, when I have a thought form or a desire or a what if, somewhere between 1 second and one decade later, the experience shows up in my life, or the opportunity for the experience. I guess that's just kind of how things work. And a number of years back, I had this idea, hey, wouldn't it be neat to have a tuned set of either chimes or bowls? The sounds are so good. And without realizing, I just literally fumbled into matching ones that I bought from different places that matched each other in pitch, and then kind of came together as a truly attuned set of bowls. And I decided that was a door opening and went through it. I don't want to say it just happened, because it took a little initiative on my part, obviously, but literally just seemed to be one of those things that just happens that way. And I know that doesn't make any sense whatsoever from the linear Western perspective, but it just happens. So that's why I feel like I'm the facilitator here. It's like almost like they found me and said, hi, we need to be expressed. You know?
Right. So
I'm not trying to go all New Age and woo-woo on you here, which I'm really not. It's funny, talking about a paradox, you know. If you would meet me in person, you would not think New Age guy. It's like he's got his edges. He's got his chutzpah. He's not just all goodness and light. But the bowls are certainly a coherent expression of the light. So.
But were you guided to each one and finding each one and then put it together?
I guess you could say so. It wasn't like there was this voice in my head or anything like that. I found a really good distributor or importer and worked a bit with them, but it sort of just came together piece by piece and group by group, where they said, hey, you might like this one. I went, oh yeah, that matches the other one I have. And off it went. not trying to go all woo-woo or grandiose here, but it was one of those wonderful serendipitous experiences. Maybe this is how life works, where you have an idea or you have an ideal, you hold that, you let it go, and then poof, the opportunity for it shows up. And if you recognize it, and as I sometimes say, grab life by the balls and go for it, then good things happen.
Do you feel that it was part of your destiny to do this? Do you feel like this is you were being guided in that direction for reason?
I hesitate to at least self-grandiotize in that sense. It's definitely a calling. It feels
a calling,
right.
Okay.
I feel really, you know, one of the hints, I guess, that it is because it really feels right. It feels good.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I would enjoy doing a lot of and am. So I guess that's a roundabout answer to say yes.
Well, I don't think that's grandiose.
I'm personally a bit guru phobic. When someone claims to be a shaman or claims to have this answer or that, I get somewhat suspicious. I want to, you know, show me the money, show me the action is the way I would tend to do it. So if it works, it works. And for me, if I were to go around trying to claiming that there's some, you know, deeper, fancier, higher something to it, well, maybe there is. But right here and now, it works, it feels good, and I'm, I don't know, what's the word, humbled. I have a lot of gratitude to be having the opportunity to record these in the way that I seem to be able to do, and have a lot of projects in the wings. There's at least 2 more CDs worth of recordings, lots more downloads, you know, on the way. So the initial one is just the beginning here, and future recordings are going to be even better, even cleaner. They'll be a little more polished, but they won't lose any of their soul or their presence or their aliveness or their ungaku. But we'll put it down as calling as much as destiny. How's that?
Yeah. That's good. Well, calling is, I think, someone's destiny, living, I mean, since you meet it. And guru just means teacher. It just means Sanskrit. So
what it is,
maybe
is that I'm looking at these as, these bowls are, the oldest one is maybe 500 years old. And
wow,
that's a lot of generations. You
yeah.
know, seven generations is quite a stretch for the Western perspective. And so there's some serious something going on here that these objects of art need to be treated with some form of reverence, of again, gratitude.
Yeah, and we didn't get, I wanted to play for our listener participants. We didn't get, I DM'd you on Twitter, but we didn't get a MP3.
Oh, they're all over. They're all, like I say, you, all the listeners have to do is go to 33bowls.com and they can have a
listen. Yeah, I know. I wanted to play a little bit for them to hear.
Yeah.
But they can if they go, if they go to 33bowls.com, they can get a sample.
Oh, absolutely. Again, I've got the entire sample there. Part of the rationale for that is that way nobody has to trust what any reviewer says. It bypasses the middleman that way, that you get to hear the whole recording, and if you like it, then you can get a higher resolution from the download, or if you wait 2 weeks, get a much higher resolution
now,
on the CD. But there won't be any rude surprises.
Okay, on your 33bowls.com, is it the whole...
It is the entire 27-minute and 45-minute tracks there to listen to. It's not just a 30-second teaser. So you get to hear all the little hiccups and little shifts and changes. And it's also convenient if somebody's away from home and just wants to chill out, they can tune into the webpage and off they go.
Mm-hmm. It is wonderful. I've actually played in the background sometimes. Well, that's how I first found you.
Oops, are you there? Suddenly, I'm not hearing anything. Hello? Oh, no. All I'm hearing is static, and I can't hear your voice. So until I hear a dial tone, I will presume that you're there, and I'll keep talking. I'm going to try calling back in on the phone number, and then we can reconnect, because I'm not hearing anything from your end. Hold on.
I guess we lost a bit of sound, and then Hans is gone. Hans, stay on the line. But I guess he disappeared. Fascinating. Here it is back. Okay.
Hello.
Hello. Speaking of sound, we lost sound.
Oh, just chalk it up to mercury grade, not a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So where were we? Oh, listening in the background. Yes, I kept talking for a while just in case it was connected, but I don't think it was.
It was connected, but for a while there was just nothing. I could hear you, I could hear you. You couldn't hear me, and then all of a sudden it disconnected. So
here we are. I have realtors listening to it in the background when they're working. It helps them focus. Athletes listen to help focus for training. I have a writer who finds that he can write more clearly when he just has the bowls in the background. Of course, insomniacs. I have one gentleman who says that it's the only music that his cats calm down to.
Hmm. Now, one thing, do you... whether daily or weekly, do you use the bowls? Are they part of your life routine,
whether
you want to think centering or meditation?
Yes. I confess to being one of the world's lazier meditators, so I'm always looking for a way to get to those coherent states. And so just playing the bowls does do that, or I'll just pop on the headphones myself and chill out and find myself back into that proverbial meditative state. Or
and
state.
Now, Hans, one thing I want to ask, because it sounds like multiple bowls are being played, if that's the correct terminology for it.
Yes.
So how do you do that? Because obviously you can only do one at a time, right?
Oh, this is the cool thing. This is truly what I call 100% organic heavy metal, in that there are no electronic tricks or overdubbing or artifices. I have long arms. That really helps in playing multiple bowls, where I can be doing what's known as a rim stroke on one and a mallet stroke on another, back and forth to set them off. And they have a reasonably long sustain when they've been struck by a mallet, so it might sound like there's more than one of me doing it, but there really is just one of me.
That's what I was trying to figure out. So you're not overdubbing. You're not
cheating.
so they are
the real thing.
Playing all 33 bowls at one time, or
well,
whatever.
Not all at once, but yes. But what you're hearing might what might sound like 3, 4, 5 at one time is still just me. Like I say, with long arms, which I guess helps.
Okay, okay. So the bowl. Now, how do you know to which ones to group? How do you know which bowls to group?
By sound. Yeah.
Okay.
The bowls, singing bowls, are typically have what they call a yang and a yin tone. They're their two primary tones, along with all of the other harmonics and subharmonics. But there's two generally. Two major tones of the yin and the yang, and I have pairs of them that are very close to each other, much again, like I said, like the piano strings that are slightly off from each other on purpose, so that when they resonate with each other, or beat with each other, as the phrase goes.
What is it called? Say that again, with each other?
It's called beat. It's called subharmonic beats. Like when
okay.
Yeah, it's an acoustic equivalent of a Moyer effect. If you look at two screen doors on each other, you'll see patterns that seem to appear out of nowhere as the screens cross each other.
Right, right.
Same sort of thing happens acoustically when you've got two frequencies very close to each other, that you get the difference frequency between them, the subharmonic beats. And because they're lower at a frequency than we hear as a specific tone, we feel or respond to them. And because they tend to match both the meditative states in the brain and the deeper cranial sacral heart rate variable time frames or frequencies, they tend to feel good. So I have sets of bowls that both match each other, yang, 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 yin, yin, but also have yang, yin, and yin, yang matching each other. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. So
they're largely heterosexual
yang,
bowls, it turns out, I guess. But
right. So you could do yin-yang, you could do yin-yin, yang-yang, you could do any variation.
I don't
variation.
Know if you can hear this over the phone, but there's
play
this
some.
Tone here, and then there's another set of them. They're not an octave of each other, but they're basically the inside out of each other, and they tend to match. And so in answer to your question, I listened, and they fit together well. And
so you listened and then see which one. So it's kind of you have to experimental. It's experiential then.
Yes.
To a degree.
Yeah, and you know, they seem to appeal to Western ears more than a lot of what you do hear out there in terms of Tibetan bowl recordings, which, again, not
now
all of them have
gotten... earlier about the crystalline, the crystal ones. You said
they were
from a crystalline structure. What is the difference between the crystal ones and then what are the other ones, metals?
Yeah, these are metal bowls. They're generally some alloy, and again, the art's probably been lost over the centuries, so that contemporary bowls usually don't quite have the same sonorous quality to them. Something like wine fans generally like older wines that have mellowed with age or something like that, although a lot of other... that's probably not the best analogy, but the crystal bowls give you a very pure tone. They're actually louder, too. They're easier to record. One of the challenges in recording this type of Tibetan bowl, or Himalayan if you prefer, the metal bowls, is that they're not very loud. They do fill up the room with presence, but they're not, again, something you just shove a microphone in front of and call it done. It's not going to sound too good that way. So there are a lot of little tricks of the trade, including proprietary tricks, to get it to sound real or to capture the essence of that, whereas it's actually easier to record a crystal bowl because it's much, much louder.
It is louder.
And all the energy is on that. Yeah, plenty louder. And I had a chance to do the proverbial jam session with somebody who had a couple of crystal bowls, and we had a lot of fun trading back and forth because she hadn't actually heard some of these really good bowls. She went, oh, these do sound good, all the nuances and subtleties. And I got a chance to try the crystal bowls and thought, oh, these are kind of neat. They're louder, they're simpler, and there may well be, outside of my domain of knowledge or expertise, correlations with either energy centers or chakras or healings or something that those specific tones do in the crystal bowls. I will leave that to the practitioners who do play the crystal bowls, who will obviously be able to do that much better than I.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, they say there's certain tones that go with certain chakras.
Yeah, and it's wonderful that it's, again, an acoustic instrument generating a real sound.
Mm-hmm.
There's, again, all of, if that nuance is captured correctly. And guaranteed sometime along here, I'm going to make a connection with somebody who does these, and we'll record them in the full-on gaku. So we'll have maybe a really good crystal ball recording somewhere down the line. I do know that, who is it, Catherine from Sound Academy or something?
Kathleen Sound Alchemy. She's listening.
I know we're throwing hints about recording her gongs at some point. So
yeah.
Here's another hint if you...
Yeah, Kathleen, are you listening?
There's a lot of that really low-frequency nuance that gets lost in most recording chains that would be great to have.
Well, even a duet, how's that?
Yeah, although the gongs are a bit louder. Well, they can be, yes. but we'll see. That I predict is somewhere in the future, maybe in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that'd be
lots of fun. Any of my ideas, I really just want a slightly happier, slightly more coherent planet than the one I showed up in. So if there's something that I can do to facilitate that, great. And if this happens to be the vehicle for that, even better, because it's right here and it's right now.
I could agree with that. I always say I want more playmates, so that's why I do what I do. You know, even with, because the more people that are aligned, awake, aware, you know, repatterned, you know, the more play there is, the more spiritual play, creative play, more self-expression, mm-hmm. you know, less drama, less of the lower frequency. Sound Alchemy is saying, yes, definitely listening. Good. Yeah, I've got to get
something. This is one of the fun things about the tech world of Twitter and cyberspace is that the clustering of like minds on Twitter, it just happens. It's another example of the self-organizing principle of everything from atoms to molecules to life to like minds. We all sort of just tend to cluster.
We do.
There we are. And there's a lot of noise out there, but there's still this coherent cluster that just happens.
I call that, well, it's part of that universal law of resonance, you know,
yes.
and go back down. But if you mm-hmm. follow the resonance, it always leads you to the most life enhancement and the most fulfillment. You know, if mm-hmm. people would just follow where they're resonating, you know,
mm-hmm.
it keeps it simple. You know, dogs do this. They sniff, they don't feel a resonance, they walk away, you know.
Well, one perspective is that the human species is a very young species. Very immature, and we don't know who we are yet collectively. We have this crisis of identity, crisis of value, crisis of knowing, whatever this is. We don't even know who we are. The puma knows it's a puma. The eagle knows it's an eagle, knows how to do its eagleness. But we are still have just stopped dragging our knuckles on the ground, and we have this seeming schism in our split brains that tend to hold on to traumas, and we literally show up not knowing who we are. And we do need to discover that, and that's the kind of thing that happens, seemingly takes at least half a lifetime in most cases, if ever, to begin to scratch the surface on that and look a little deeper, both higher and deeper, to find out who we are and how we fit in and how we are an intricate part of the greater whole and how important it is that what we do does affect everything as opposed to we're just this passive spectator, we can do anything and yada, yada, yada. So
that's true. That's
and we have to integrate the two halves of our brain. It's sort of an or else, I guess.
Things are getting to that extreme level or fever pitch. Got to bring that intuitive, mm-hmm. abstract nowness, you know, mm-hmm. the play. Got to bring that in, that higher mind, if you will, or creative mind, connecting into that aspect,
mm-hmm.
which I see that happening more and more, and I feel that things like, you know, connecting like we are through technology,
mm-hmm.
You know, you would even with the singing bowls through technology, giving people a tool
mm-hmm.
to really be able to unify. That's my word for today. I feel like we're in this unifying, you know, unifying all the parts of ourselves, you know. There's this wonderful unification that's happening right now.
Well, there's something called the soft technology path, where we walk into it with open eyes and open minds as opposed to blindly. One of the habits that this young species, the humans, have is jumping into a new technology before we fully understand its ramifications.
Mm.
And even in the aspect of music reproduction, when the compact disc took over from the LP, for any of you old-timers out there, digital technology was hailed as perfect sound forever, so forth, and it absolutely was hype. And those who were listening to it could see what was wrong, could sense what was wrong, and eventually we have mapped through deeper understanding of the phenomena that happened in the digitization of music to understand that there were other dimensions that were not being paid attention to in the initial hype. But we jumped in head over heels without fully understanding what it was, and then subsequent generations, we start to clean up the mess to the point where digitally reproduced music is capable of the full ongaku, the full essence, the full experience.
But oh, now it is.
Yeah, it takes
a while. Right.
We seem to approach it where we jump in without looking, then we flail around in the water and figure out how to swim, versus why don't we learn to swim and then get into the water? We generally do that. That seems to be our habit. So the soft technology path involves paying a little more attention to what we're doing. You don't just jump in and do something without really grokking and really feeling what it's going to do.
Maybe a little more presence, a little more.
Yeah.
And now, tell us that word again, ongaku, what that means.
Oh, yeah. For lack of better words, when you hear something live, there's a lot of what we call there-ness. There's more there-ness there. We have spatiality. We have an ebb and a flow to it. We have liquidity to the sound. We have resolution. We have, did I say nuance already? Mm. When it gets chopped up and made into little bits and then put through a lossy compression system for easy distribution as in MP3s, it loses some of that essence, that subtlety. And again, our ears are extremely sensitive to the tiny, tiny little squiggles in the music, one part per million, that get lost. They fall below the cracks, so to speak, of the digitization process, unless it's done very, very, very carefully. And ongaku is one way of describing that. It was termed in terms of music by an outfit from Japan known as Audio Note. They built vacuum tube amplifiers that sound incredible in ways that did not make sense to the technologically or linearly minded. I had an opportunity to listen to one of these at one time, and it was fascinating that the effect that this piece of technology, or technology and art, had on the music, in that it was at an audio show where every other demonstration room was blasting away with subwoofers, and so it was like lots of boom and tinkle outside, as it's called in the business, right? Boom and tizzle. And the room with the ongaku audio note amplifier put on an LP of just some simple piano playing. It was like old Bill Evans playing some piano, or an old one from the 60s, an LP. And everybody in the room was listening to and enjoying the piano playing there. And then when the song stopped, we suddenly realized that the boom and sizzle from all the other rooms had been going on the whole time, but we didn't notice it. All we heard was piano. It held that presence, or that there-ness, really, really well.
Wow.
So that's kind of a definition of the ongaku, and that is part of what we're hearing in the 33 Bowls recordings with how I'm doing it, that you get more of that something. I have people all the time saying, wow, that sounds really clean, even on little cheesy computer speakers. I think the caveat is that on some tiny, tiny, tiny computer speakers, they may get a little overwhelmed, so some of the thwacks on the bowls are going to sound a little too unsettling, but I've kind of adjusted the parameters so that on most systems it sounds pretty good. How's that?
Yeah. Well, we are winding out of our ongaku experience here, Hans. If I may.
Who is this guy?
Love that. The there-ness, it applies. We're using sound by talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. It's been great having you on here,
well,
sharing about this phenomenal background with these Tibetan bowls. I mean, I'm fascinated. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I've got a few myself. There's something about the sound mm-hmm. that just carries you away or carries you within, however you want to put it. It's so, like you said earlier, that
wait,
ebb, that flow.
That? Can I borrow that? Carries you away or carries you within? Yeah.
Yes, yes, you can. You can take it. You can take
it. All right.
Oh, it's been great having you on. And again, we've been speaking to Hans, the human behind 33 Bowls. You can find out more information about the Tibetan Singing Bowls at www.33bowls.com. Thanks for being on the program, Hans.
All right, thanks. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, see you in the stream.
All right, bye.
And listener participants, as always, wonderful to connect with all of you. Wonderful thing about the 33 Bowls by Hans is you can even just go to the website and just listen. And, of course, you'll have the CD coming out shortly as well. But it's just wonderfully centering sounds, wonderfully for your heart and soul. And you all are wonderful for my heart and soul. Wonderful to connect with all of you again on this Friday. And as always, until next time, continue to share your insight, shine your light, and keep awake. Now, why don't we end with a little bit of Thunderbeat? I think it's that kind of a day. Ascension by Thunderbeat.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.